and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham, and we are feeling fab, thanks to Flowers Unlimited. Well then, the international breaks are now over until March, which means we can get on with the very real business of qualifying once again for our very own international break next season. We currently sit in sixth position, level on points with Arsenal, Chelsea and this season's surprise package, Nottingham Forest, as we travel to Bournemouth on Saturday, looking for our third away victory of the season. We'll be hoping for a clean bill of health then, as our returning international players return to give boss Fabian Hertzler a massive team selection headache. Also this week, the women's team bounced back from their defeat at Arsenal, beating West Ham 3-2 at the Amex on Saturday, and as a result, the season third in the table. A trip to Leicester in the League Cup is next for the She-Girls. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the Albion's Head of Media and Communications. It's Mr. Paul Camlin, and alongside Paul, making his Albion Roar debut, is the chairman of the Fans Advisory Board. Please welcome Mr. Clive Steed. Hello, chaps. How are we? Lovely to see you.
Very well, thank you. Yeah, delighted to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. let's start off with AD's sort of very, very good joke about being fab. The Fans Advisory Board. Now, give us the lowdown as to A, what it is, B, how it came about, and C, what your role in it, Clive, is.
So, Fans Advisory Board, I guess it's come out of the sort of Tracy Crouch report and the Fan Live Review and all those good things that you spoke about previously. And it was going to become a Premier League requirement, and Brighton, being very Brighton, decided they should probably act before it became a legal requirement. So set up the FAB. I think they were the first in the Premier League to set one up. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly not a shadow board, which was sort of one of the initial suggestions from the Fan Dev Review. But what it is is a bunch of supporters from across the supporter group, be that season ticket holders, 1901 members, My Albion Plus members, WSL supporters, as a way of being an interface between club and supporters in two ways, really, sort of, you know, in two directions, I should say, such that, you know, we can bring our concerns and ideas to the club and vice versa, really. So they've got something they want to talk about or how it would impact on the fans. We can have quite a nice open dialogue about what that means to supporters.
So, Clive, when this was set up, there was a lot of debate about whether the Albion actually needed a Fan Advisory Board, because basically the lines of communication were already there between the club and the supporter group. It's more a case of other clubs being not so communicative. Is that fair?
I think so. I mean, you know, one of the joys I have as being chair of the FAB is I actually sit on the Premier League FAB group with the other all the other Premier League clubs and talk about how they're implementing FABs, how they're getting on with it. And I have to say, you know, unsurprisingly, Brighton have gone about it in a very good way. We elect who the chair is. The FAB this year, it's clearly the first round of the FAB, the club chose who was going to be on it. But the second and third rounds of that, the FAB chose who those members were going to be. We wanted sort of some younger people. We wanted to have people that had some time to commit to the role. So, you know, the club have been very, they've let us get on with it, actually. They've been very good. Whereas other clubs, the chair of the FAB is an employee of the club. They're not allowed to meet outside of FAB meeting. It's a very sort of cloak and dagger. Whereas, you know, Brighton have been very much, let's get on with it and do our thing, which has been great.
I was about to say, do they actually all cover the same sort of model? I mean, or is it, I mean, like I say, as we all know, it's supposed to be, like I say, an interface between certain areas of the club and certain fan bases, and obviously other football clubs have specific sort of fan clubs that they'll represent from. So is it a case of just electing from across the board, or is there, you know, and the model itself, is there, you know, do you shout your own independence, or is there a kind of a line that has to be towed somewhere down the, you know, somewhere down the road?
No, I don't think, I mean, so, you know, if you look at Liverpool, I think everyone on their FAB is a member of Spirit of Shankly. If you look at Hammers, West Ham, they've only just set up their fab. I think it's taken quite a long time, and that was the Irons in Supporters Association. So they had a very strong independent sports association at West Ham, and they couldn't quite get that to a terms of reference that both the club and the supporters were happy with. So I guess we've come at it from a slightly, elect some people. One of the ideas we had in the last round of recruitment was actually we should maybe draw from official supporters clubs, but they actually didn't want to put people forward. So
I've got
we.
to be honest with you. Having sat now, I for a short time I replaced Liz Costa on the Premier League fans representative. They board. They had a meeting. I went to about two or three of them. And actually, when you say about West Ham, because on this round table, and the Premier League were very open and very communicative, but there was two clubs on Newcastle and West Ham. I'm going to name names where they that they found it such the fans found it such a struggle to actually communicate with their respective football clubs. Now I don't know how it's turning out in Newcastle, but when you say West Ham, it's taken this long. I mean, if you got to the bottom, I mean, appreciate this is an Albion show, but if you got to the bottom, talking to the West Ham guys as to what the issue is with them, because I mean, what affects them could affect the rest of us, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think it's about agreeing the independence. So I think West Ham were very keen to have it less independent and wanted a bit more input on what could and couldn't be said. So, and they had a very, I think there's 20,000 of these in the West Ham Independent Sports Association. So a large group that's been going for a very long time. And I think they wanted to keep that spirit of how they got to where they were. We don't have supporter groups in that sort of size across the Albion, really. I mean, surprisingly. I mean, there's more. I think there's more gay Gooners and gay Spurs or LGBT
I think the Proud Lily
plus
Whites, they're called, yeah.
proud Lilywhites.
Yeah.
There's
It's the
more of
Proud
those
Lily Whites, isn't it? Yeah.
than there are official supporters. If you, London, Burwash,
Yeah.
if you add all those together, there's still more in those two groups than there are in all of the Brighton groups, which. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know why that is and why we've got to that situation.
Well, the odd thing is that I think I feel, and I've thought about this before, is I think there's a sense of history about this, and the history being is, and we're back to the something we're going to talk about later, is the since the last 25 years where, when we've fought the club, under the days of Archer and Belotti and Stanley, when we fought the club. It was never really, I mean, there was nominally the Brighton Independent Supporters Association, even that was just a loose collective, but we fought it as one. And even then, there was no official charter, there was no membership, there was no fee. We just got together. I mean, I suppose the word, one word that springs to mind is anarchist, but it's not really even anarchy. It was a collective that got together. And yes, you're right. There are obviously, let's say, there's the Northwest Sussex Seagulls, there's Seagulls over London, there's all the various sort of regional and geographical groups. But when it came to that sort of thing, we never really sort of split again. We all stayed as one collective. So even when you've had your delegation, your elections, it was never really right. There's an independent support association that says this, the official support club. It's never been that. We've always been one group, haven't we, Clive?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think Nigel Summers, you probably know very well, is the chair of the
We
what the
do.
official supporters association. So he was on one of the inaugural members of the FAB. So that coverage and that history is there. But you're right, there isn't. I mean, I think for Chelsea, 5,000 people applied to be on their FAB.
Right.
There was a lot less when I applied. I mean, I haven't got the numbers. I've never had them, but. Yeah, we were looking through a spreadsheet of 200 or 300 people last year when the next round of recruits were there. So it's I don't know. I mean, clearly Chelsea are a massive club and got a lot of
Sure,
history, and there's other reasons people might want to be part of that. But
but if I can bring Paul in on this, in that case, being on the kind of the other side of the fence in that sense, I mean, from your point of view, and certainly I feel this, is that as AD said at the top of the show, the lines of communication between the fans and the club is already pretty good. And I know this, it's not how we feel. We've had it when in talking to the Premier League, where they've come back and said, well, you're embarrassing everyone else by the way that you actually sort of communicate with your fans. I mean, I assume this is something that's you know, the makes you feel quite kind of proud, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've always done it, Al. You know that. It goes back to those days that you talk about. And I think the question you asked at the top of the show is there a need for the fan advisory board? There probably isn't a need for it. We're not desperate for it, but we need to embrace it and utilize it and use it in a positive way. And I think that's what we're doing. So, you recently saw the protests over ticket pricing, and I know that wasn't obviously a fab thing, but the supporters clubs were sort of reluctant to protest against Brighton because they feel they're getting a fair crack of the whip on the ticket pricing here.
That, well, I mean,
So, that
basically,
would be one. What
the
was
club isn't doing what other clubs are doing. So you think it seems a bit of a sort of an anathema to protest against something that's not happening here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you look at
Yeah,
that,
and I.
the UEFA package that we got for the home games, the 3-match package was
That was
excellent, and
brilliant. Sensational, wasn't it?
and
Yeah.
Twenty seven
I
quid a match, yes, please.
yeah, exactly. So it, but I think what the FAB can do and have done is as we're sort of building a relationship, building a bit of trust with the club, is actually just be a very simple sounding board on some of the ideas they have, some of the ideas we have. There was an example. There was a travel survey came out about 6 months ago, and the club, well, they shared it with us before it went out. And the first question was, how do you travel to a match? I said, well, are we talking about a 12:30 kickoff on a Saturday, an 8 o'clock kickoff on a Monday? Am I coming straight from work? Is it, and depending on that time of kickoff, it's going to make a very big difference. Am I going for a few beers in the city first? Am I going out with lunch suddenly? Or am I sort of hot footing on the train and rushing to the ground? Because as a fan, I act very differently on different match days.
Absolutely. I think we all
And they
do.
hadn't considered that actually. So that was what I said, oh, actually, take a bit of
No.
a step back. You behave differently for different matches. And so some simple ideas like that. There was one of the first successes we had was the. And if you come by coach, it would be the only people that would impact. Was they used to have a large left luggage locker at the top of the coach park stairs, and what that resulted was a final whistle when you're walking up the stairs, you have away fans coming down carrying suitcase over their heads. It's actually quite dangerous, And in fairness to the club, they looked at it on CCTV, so wasn't even aware of that being a problem for some reason. Yeah, and the next game it was moved. So there's little things like that that we just have. A slightly different view on things, and then increasingly getting the club's ear to say, "Oh, you might want to look at this. Can we think about that?"
With that in
Yeah.
mind, actually, Paul, I was just, I mean, it's a microcosm of just pure selfishness, seeing as I now live in Goring-by-Sea and the last train is usually about 10 past 10. Does the club have any clout with the well, specifically the rail services to, because like I say, a lot of our games now seem to be in the evening or certainly late kickoff, that getting home sometimes can be a pain in the backside. Is there sort of any scope for this, or has this been raised at all?
It's not something we have control over. Fans will be aware of that, and we have to maintain a working relationship as well with the management of the all the travel networks. So, let's not lose sight of the fact that the people working within those organisations are doing their best and trying their
Oh,
hardest
absolutely.
to provide a really good. Service and what have you for Albion fans. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Can it improve? Yes, of course it can. We sort of see these things that can occur from time to time. Sometimes it's circumstances out of the control of the club, or well, usually out of control of the club, but certainly sometimes out of the control of the train operators. All we can do is obviously, try our best to negotiate on behalf of the fans and provide the serve better service. But even things with those ongoing services, it's kind of that's where you need to sort of be raising that with you with the rail companies. But in terms of what we can do as a club, obviously we've invested significantly in terms of the Amex as a destination and the sort of travel subsidy and what have you, and that's always been there. And we're investing in the fan zone, which we hope will help alleviate some of that travel away from the ground. And people will choose to hang around, stay a bit later. Maybe if it's a 3 o'clock game on a Saturday, they might stay and watch the 5 o'clock game in the fan
Sure.
zone with their pals. They might come a bit earlier if it's a 3 o'clock game to watch the lunchtime kickoff, or even if it's a late midweek game, some might decide, we'll stay and we've only got to get back into Brighton. We know there are trains coming back into Brighton later, and we can hang around and have a beer and just let the crowds die down. So, but I mean, invariably with a midweek game, we're normally clear within around about 30 to 40 minutes that clears. So it's not, when it works well. And anybody that goes to football anywhere, you've got this problem. You've got a huge number of people to move in a condensed space of time. But it is something we constantly look at, trying to improve and make the system better. So we haven't got any clout as such to do that, but that doesn't stop us from trying to do that.
I mean, Clive, reading through the minutes of the FAB meetings, I mean the travel situation is a hot topic of conversation amongst the Fabsters, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and we were keen to get the survey, and actually, having got the results, which the club shared with us quite openly, it's quite difficult. I think Paul can speak more about the relationship with Southern Rail and what we can do. All we can keep doing is bringing to the party that there is a problem and that fans are unhappy about it, really.
I mean, it is something that I know that like Lord Basham has mentioned recently, and he's looked at, look he's actually looking into making some sort of well, not a survey.
What's
He's looking at different ways of how it can be improved.
and that's what we all want, isn't it?
Yeah,
Actually,
absolutely. I mean, we don't want that situation. I always shudder back to it, and I think it was probably around this time, about 6, 7, maybe 8 years ago, we played Aston Villa on a Friday night, in the,
Oh
while we were in
God,
the
yeah,
Championship,
remember
and yeah, then the trains arbitrarily stopped, and there was this bizarre situation. I've never seen it at a football match where these messages coming out saying, "By the way, you're not getting home." Because the train they've decided to stop the trains. I mean, I
Well, you used
remember.
to get that at football in the 80s, of course. You wouldn't make the station,
Well,
but
yeah, to be fair, most of the trains mostly stopped because the toilets would have been blocked up with the curtains and the light bulbs even flying out the window, and that's a slightly different thing. And
But
but
and by the
yeah,
way,
no.
that's not just a Brighton problem. That happens up and down the country. Some of us would have been watching the Bournemouth Southampton game the other night, where the Bournemouth fans took great delight in the fact that Southampton fans were told that they wouldn't be able to get back to Southampton by train. Obviously, a little bit easier than Villa fans getting back from the
Well,
South Coast,
exactly.
admittedly that they can. But even so, I've been in that situation. Obviously, do a lot of England aways. I think we were in Glasgow for the game at Hampden Park, came out of the ground, and the authorities decided that there were no more trains. So
Brilliant.
you're scrambling for Ubers, and we were lucky enough within a few minutes we managed to get an Uber. But again, in the summer, Gelsenkirk and some of the Albion fans would have been out there.
Oh, I heard about this, yeah.
And that was worse than anything that I've ever seen at the Amex. Thankfully, again, we were going the other way, which was lucky because those services were running quite freely. But the horror stories that we heard from friends the following days in terms of trying to get back to their digs in Essen, which was in the opposite direction, was some of them walking along to carriageways, walking for hours, just to try and get home. Ubers were costing hundreds of euros to get a few miles. So these things aren't just confined to us here at
No,
Brighton.
but when you've got a club that's actually sort of very much beholden to public transport, probably maybe more than others, I don't know. But
But
when you,
Al, I go back to the point. When it works and it
yeah,
works
always
well,
brilliant. 3 o'clock
so
kickoff, so a rarely, rarely a problem. I mean, we've got
this is.
tests coming up, haven't we? Because one, it's Christmas, coming up. I mean, we've got, for instance, Southampton Friday week. We've got other games coming up on Thursdays and Fridays.
Have we got 1 3 o'clock kickoff between now and January, I think?
Is it?
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
I
so
believe that's this week, isn't it?
well, no, I think it means here. So,
No,
yeah,
I think it is actually
is
home
it
and
home or
away.
away?
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
because
three
Leicester away is
o'clock,
on
three
Sunday at
o'clock on
two
a
o'clock.
Saturday.
You've got Fulham away on a Thursday. You got
Palace is on a
the
Sunday.
Sunday.
yeah,
Southampton's a Friday night.
yeah,
Yeah, so
yeah.
3 o'clock Saturdays are
Yeah,
They're a
that yeah,
rarity, aren't
that's
they?
the time it
Yes.
works best. But I mean, it's not to say it doesn't. I mean, the point is, yes, it does work when it. You're right, Paul. When it works brilliantly.
And also, to be fair to the travel companies and certainly the operational guys here, that's the vast majority of the time. You know,
Oh yeah.
I know it was very difficult at the Liverpool game. Everybody stayed to the end, and there was some long queues. But in fairness, people worked through them and got through those queues. It was a longer period to get away from the ground. But I think that was because we had a very different crowd dynamic that night, so people
Yeah, that
stayed
is
to the
something we
end.
see quite a lot, isn't it? When, particularly when we had the concerts at the ground, where it's,
Yeah, and
and
if you
with
remember
the
the Euros.
Women's Euros, it's people who are used to going to the stadium week in, week out. They know how it works and what the ebb and flow is, and to stick around for a bit afterwards.
I think Park and Ride wasn't working for that game, or it wasn't free. Yeah,
But
and
it's,
that's going to make a big difference,
but
for
yeah,
sure.
but you know, if when you've
I
got.
mean, the other thing that I would say, I'd still rather queue for 45 minutes and be at the back of the queue, see the full 90 minutes and stoppage time,
Yeah.
than get away in 10 minutes.
Oh,
It's
absolutely.
the nature of going to football. You're with your mates, you know, you're
Yeah.
all in it together. I'd still rather do that
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
than
Hey,
miss the.
and for any problems that we might have, at least it's not as bad as Upton Park ever was.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Okay, so Clive, one of the main things that the FAB is looking at is like fan engagement. So, I mean, they've recently run a fan engagement report. So, what can you tell us about that, and what sort of things have you been looking at?
I think all options are open, really. So, you always come back to the debate of should we have a drum or not. I was previously sort of over my dead body a drum, but I'm beginning to come to the conclusion that if you want to create an atmosphere and build an atmosphere and look at what Highbury or Arsenal, it's still always be Highbury to me. What
Yeah.
they've done with sort of the Ashburton Army and that group they've got next to the away fans there that make a load of noise, have got their drum, and they've turned that ground from an absolute library to something that's got a bit of an atmosphere going. So yeah, I think we have to look at those things. I'm a big advocate of safe standing. I think we ought to also look at if you're going to put safe standing in the north stand, you've probably got a once in a generation type opportunity to recut where people are in that stand. Now, people may or may not want to move, but my point is, well, let's ask the fans that are impacted by it. I don't stand in the North Stand, although I was there for Man City. But if I'm there every week and I want to move and want to create a more of a sing, I don't like the same singing section, but get the noisy people together. That's a great opportunity to do that. If we're going to remove the away fans, they're currently behind the goal. They're either going to move to the east or the west, depending on which week you talk to Paul Barber. But there is another opportunity there to sort of say, well, can we get a noisy bunch of people in the south stand next to the away fans? So think we have to try and do something and try and get a bit more. But actually, the Man City game was fantastic, wasn't it?
And the Liverpool game as well. The last two
Yes.
games. I've got to say, the atmosphere's been sensational. And I think, that was one of the things as well that Fabian said at the start of the season. You know, it's on us as the team to create the atmosphere as much as it's on the fans. You know, we've got to play an exciting brand of football that creates that atmosphere. And if you look at those two games, we were never really out of both of those games.
None.
And obviously, the Man City game, we came back and won, which was fantastic. But I think Fabian referenced it in the press conference afterwards, how
He did, yeah.
important the crowd were. I always think the 5:30 kickoffs are decent because you've all had 2.5 hours longer in the pub. But I think that helps. I think that does help. It just creates that little bit more noise, that little bit more atmosphere. It's under the lights invariably, because of, particularly at this time of year. And that always evokes a sort of slightly better atmosphere. But yeah, I've got to say that in terms of the Man City game, I don't think there's been many games here where the atmosphere has been better. Possibly the Sheffield Wednesday one is sort of the reference point, isn't it? The playoffs. But
Yeah.
I thought the atmosphere was incredible that night. And
Marseille.
I was going to say Marseille was probably one of the for me. But
yes,
I think back.
To be fair, I was talking more the domestic games, and I
But.
think all the European games were very special because I think nobody left early. everybody was in the ground. And also the other thing that was really important, that City game, again, in terms of the actual numbers who turned up, it was the biggest crowd of the season. So that helps as well. You know, and that kind of brings me on to a point which is really important. The more bums we can get on seats, the better the atmosphere in the ground, the more it helps the team. You know,
because I'm hearing, Paul, and maybe you confirm this, I'm not sure, that the ticket exchange isn't necessarily being used to its fullest advantage, is it?
I think there's a few serial reoffenders, if you want to call it that, that are not coming to games, not relisting their tickets. Look, last year we gave fans back over £1 million in revenue. You know, that went back to fans who were season ticket holders and weren't able to use their tickets. We understand work, health reasons, family reasons, other reasons, whatever they might be, that sometimes you can't make every game. So we really want fans to list their tickets for resale. There's three reasons why it's a win-win for everybody. The fans get some money back, less the administration fee. We put extra bums on seats, therefore creating a better atmosphere within the ground, which is to everybody's benefit. The fans, the team, we all want a good atmosphere when we come to football. We don't want it to be flat. And we've been in the stadium when there's been really sort of low attendances of sold out games for whatever reason. You know, yeah. I'm thinking that Boxing Day fixture a few years ago or some of those sort of COVID season fixtures where, it felt like you were rattling around in the ground. Nobody wants that. And then, of course, the other thing, a lot of people sort of feel the club are selling on the ticket. We can't sell the ticket at the price it's sold back because it has to be sold at the match day price for obvious reasons. Otherwise, everybody would just wait for the exchange to open and not buy tickets at match day prices. And the money that the club makes from that ultimately gets reinvested. It keeps the ticket prices down. You know, it helps us keep those ticket prices competitive. So, fans are not complaining about being exploited or feeling exploited at Brighton. And it helps us do what we did in the summer and essentially put the team out on the pitch and have a transfer window like we did. All those things, all those little bits of extra revenue really can help and really can make the difference on both those factors. So, it's not like somebody's profiteering from those tickets. That money is going back into the football club and being reinvested by the football club. So it helps everybody. It helps the club. It helps the fans. The individual gets their money back. And that fan that perhaps wouldn't get a ticket without the exchange is able to come to the game. So you're helping fellow Albion fans. For me, it's a no-brainer. And you can see from, I think the Manchester City game, the ticket office told me a stat in the days after. If you listed your ticket 5 days before the game, there was a 97% probability that it would resell and you would get that portion of your money back on the season ticket. And obviously, that, because it was a popular fixture and the crowd and the atmosphere, everything sort of comes off the back of that. But it is really important to, whenever you can, to use that exchange. And of course, there's a little bit of work that we've done around those that have basically bought a season ticket and are not coming, basically. Withholding that seat from somebody else. So now going forward, if you don't come to a minimum of 25% of the games as a season ticket holder, you run the risk of losing your seat because you're not using it in the way that it's intended. And look, we don't make any apology for that. That's if you're a season ticket holder. Don't get me wrong. If people have got genuine reasons around health, work displacement, other reasons, just contact us and tell us, and we'll work with the supporters. But if somebody's just using that to sit on a seat,
just use the ticket exchange, people. Because, like I said, what is the point at which the ticket exchange opens? Is it 100% sellout? Is it 98% sellout?
Pretty much, not quite 100%, but We get to a point where you've maybe only got a few singles dotted around the ground, and we know we've got some decent availability ready to go on the exchange, and we'll open the exchange. So, but look, every Premier League game is tending to sell out. People want to come and watch this team. It's an exciting team. The manager's got them playing a really exciting brand of football. People want to be at the Amex. So, the games are going to sell out and the exchange is going to reopen. So, even if you're thinking, oh, the game hasn't sold out yet, and you can't make the fixture, relist it for sale, or you can, of course, allocate it, transfer it, upgrade it. There's the option to do that as well through the ticket office. So always talk to the ticket office. That's what they're there for. They'll help you. If you've got a genuine problem and it's like, look, I can't come this weekend, but I want the ticket to be used, talk to the ticket office. They're there to help, and they're
Because
brilliant.
one thing that does concern me, and I've kind of noticed this a little bit, and I don't think it's just me that's necessarily noticed this, is that obviously I think it's not necessarily, well, it isn't an original season ticket holder, but when a ticket has obviously become available, or maybe even someone has passed it along, I've noticed there's a little bit of a creep of away fans in the home end. And that's never a, I'll say it's never a pleasant thing. You always want to watch football with your own teammates, with your own friends. But I mean, it shouldn't be done, is it? I mean, there's laws about this, isn't it, Paul?
Well, strictly speaking, the ground regulations are that in terms of the segregation, that away fans should not be in the home end. So our terms and conditions, I think, is the official terminology. But the ground regulations effectively say, and that these are Premier League and Football League ground regs that have been around for years. So you're absolutely right. You're not permitted to sit in the home end as an away fan. It's not permitted. You shouldn't be passing on those tickets to away supporters to sit in the home end. 1901 Club's slightly different. The corporate areas obviously are neutral as they are at most stadiums, but the general admission tickets is not permitted for an away fan to sit in the home areas. And there's quite a few reasons for this. One, our fans, as you've quite rightly said, don't want to see away fans in the home areas popping up if the opposition score, celebrating a goal. That then creates flash points. It creates incidents that our stewarding teams then have to go in and deal with. So it's really important that tickets are not sort of passed on unofficially, to people who might be of the away team's persuasion. That puts you at risk as a season ticket holder for passing the ticket on. It puts the individual at risk as well for obvious reasons. And it goes against the Premier League's and the Football League's rules and regulations, which we as a member club have to adhere to. So it just isn't permitted. So the best way is, though, unfortunately, yeah, we all know a Liverpool fan that wants to come to the Liverpool game. We all know a Man United fan that wants to come to the Man United game. I get asked countless times, and the answer is no. Sorry, unless you're a Brighton fan, I'm not going to tell you how to get a ticket in the home end or help you get a ticket in the home end if they're available. So I've always, very, very strictly adhered to that policy. That I just won't get away fans ticket. I've got a mate who I go to England with, who's a big Ipswich Town fan, and he managed to get a 1901 ticket. He lives locally, but I wouldn't give him a ticket in the home end. It's not right that you're denying a Brighton fan a seat to look after a mate who supports another team. That's just always been my way, and I don't think it's something we should be doing.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB. And of course, on our podcast, this show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited. And Alan, so Flowers Unlimited, where are they? Who are they?
Who are they? They are a lovely, lovely florist. I can say that because they did our wedding. 175 to
Not our
177.
wedding, I should point out. We're not
The what?
married.
No, when I say ours, yes. The number of people have actually said to me when I turn up on the website, "Where's your missus?" Well, she's at home. No, not that one, the bald one. No, they're at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, as owned by Dave Costa. For all your floral needs and other things. Now Christmas is coming up. They've got all some kind of floral decorations that you want for Christmas. They'll be selling their trees, they'll be selling their wreaths, they'll be selling table settings, all sorts of things that just make your Christmas just that little bit better. And if you do pop in there, or you can order by phone, do let them know that you're an Albion season ticket holder, because you automatically get 20% discount from them. Their details are always flashing up on the advert boards at the stadium. The official flower supplier for Brighton and Hove Albion. So that's Flowers Unlimited, Portland Road, Hove. Proud sponsors. Thank you very much indeed, Dave Costa of the Albion Roar.
Absolutely. Now, Paul, there's been lots of conjecture in regards to how the away tickets are handled at the moment, in regards to having your name written on them and the spot checks and stuff. What's the latest on that? What can you tell us?
I thought we might get this one on the back of the other two things, but yeah, unfortunately, it's a small minority who are causing the problem, passing tickets on to people who, not entitled to buy at that point, particularly with the limits on some of the away grounds. We've got the game this weekend at Bournemouth, obviously, where we get a very small allocation, and therefore those who are passing on the ticket and those who are receiving the tickets, again, you're running the risk of sort of various sanctions and loyalty point deductions and potentially even bans. But we've become aware of this, sadly, because of some antisocial behaviour that's led to ejections and arrests at grounds. And then we're finding that those individuals, not listed as individuals who have tickets for that game, so they've obviously got their tickets through other means. So unfortunately, we're having to reintroduce the spot checks. Some of the tickets will be left for collection at the away grounds. None of us really want to be doing this. Certainly, the ticket office staff don't want to be doing this, travelling to away grounds to hand out a small batch of tickets. But it kind of leaves us with no other option. So it's disappointing. And of course, those who are buying tickets and passing them on are sort of creating this closed shop at the top of the loyalty point table, if you like, because, even though they're not attending the games, they're getting the loyalty points, which they shouldn't be. And therefore they can sort of pick and choose the away games that they wish to attend. The ones they don't, obviously passing the tickets on. And those are getting into the hands of other fans, some of whom, unfortunately, are more likely to be behaving in an antisocial way. So we don't want it. It's not fair on the Albion supporters who have qualified rightly, through gathering the loyalty points and playing by the system for those away games. So, sadly, we've got everybody now has to sort of go through these extra protocols for the away games, which is, it's more work for the club, it's more cost for the club. Of course, there'll be supporters who, vast majority of who play by the rules, who will now find their match days completely inconvenienced because they may have to go and collect their tickets, or they've got to, carry their ID with them, which hopefully that's a very unintrusive sort of hurdle to leap. But the ones whose tickets are held back for collection at random, it's an inconvenience that all of us could do without.
I think we have tried to push, and we had a bit of pushback, not necessarily from the club, it's a Premier League issue. It feels unfortunate that there isn't a ticket exchange for away games, because you're asking people to commit quite a way in advance, really, then go to a match. And you can't return away tickets at the moment. There is talk of when all Premier League clubs are digital that will be able to happen. But people's work commitments, people's life changes, things happen. And it would be nice if we could get those away tickets returned. And So as a fab, we'll keep lobbying for that because we think
Sorry,
it's an important thing to do.
what's the blockage on that?
The club at the moment won't return paper tickets.
No. Sorry, I get that bit, but I mean, I assume you're saying is that ideally it's got to be Premier League wide or not at all.
Well, that's the story we're getting, is that once all the Premier League clubs are gone digital, I think the release of the tickets is much later on a digital ticket release. So Everton and clubs like that, I think. And then they're suggesting they may well be able to reallocate tickets. But at the moment, we've been told, I mean, perhaps Paul can confirm, but yeah, that isn't an option until more clubs go down a digital ticketing route. So.
Yeah, the difficulty now is if you've got a ticket and you're in Goring-by-Sea, the next person, you wake up on a Saturday morning, suddenly you've got to go to work, you're unwell. The next person in the list, how do you get that paper ticket over to them? Whereas if it's a digital thing, now with England away, because you pick your tickets up on the day before or the day of a game, if those tickets go uncollected, there is a waiting list, and you can put your name on a waiting list. One of the group that I was with in Helsinki last month managed to get a ticket, got a call on the day of the game, come and collect the ticket, and was able to attend the game. But that's when you're collecting all the tickets from the ground on the day of the game. We certainly could have done it for the European fixtures.
Well, I think you did do Ajax. Certainly that happened,
Yeah,
didn't it? People got some last minute tickets because they weren't collected,
so
which is great.
anything. Yeah, anything that, but obviously, once the ticket's gone out and been processed, and somebody then, and we understand that happens, people get ill or family circumstances or work circumstances change and they can't attend the game, but there's no way of getting that ticket from A to B. Clubs don't like reissuing tickets because you know what happens. Sometimes it's certain unscrupulous fans might use them to sort of get access when they shouldn't. So it's difficult. Once the digital ticketing comes online with all 20 clubs, then you can very easily cancel that ticket, reissue that ticket. But again, you've still got that problem. You might be the next person in line who wants that ticket, but you've then got to get to Newcastle the next day, and you haven't got the means to do
Yeah,
that.
but
So
I mean, there's always ways of doing that. If you think, well, okay, I'm next in the list, but I can't make it to Newcastle, then you just hit decline, and the next person go. I mean, it's
Absolutely. But
I can't believe it's not doable.
that's very easy in a digital world. And until we've got 20 clubs that are digital, you can't do that. Even with the tickets for the Euros in the summer, the tickets weren't issued to you until the day of the game in some instances. So people were waiting for their tickets to be issued on the day of the game. And then you could slightly different with the Euros because you could actually transfer it by putting all the details of that individual in. They needed to have a UEFA account, very similar to what we do, but you could then transfer that ticket. We wouldn't allow that because that basically is exactly what I'm talking about. It would be the next person who's next in the pecking order, if you like, to receive that ticket.
Well, that's what happened with the women's Euros, with the games at the Amex there, because the way the ticketing
But that's UEFA's ticketing policy.
Yeah, I mean, it worked really well. I mean, obviously, the tickets went on sale quite early, and all of a sudden, as the match days were coming closer and closer, people realizing they
But
weren't able to go, and they were just able to transfer them.
AD, they were general admission tickets that were general sale tickets. For the England fans tickets that at a UEFA game, they wouldn't do that with them because they would be England fan members who would qualify for those tickets, and you would apply through the England Travel Club. So, for example, again, just come back from Athens the day before the game, you had to go to a hotel in the centre of Athens. Sadly, not the one that we had for the AEK Athens game. Collect your ticket and then go to the game. And I think they were actually digital tickets that they'd printed off. So that was how
Brilliant.
ludicrous it was. So you had a like a A4 bit of paper with a QR code on, which actually didn't get scanned because of the organisation was so bad out there. They actually opened an exit gate to let everybody in without scanning their tickets. Yes, I did witness that with my own eyes, and not ideal. But that's what you were dealing with there. So it's there's no once it goes digital, it gives you a real opportunity to look at it and then look at reallocating in the tickets, but there is no, it's a bit like there's no silver bullet to fix the problem.
Sure. I mean, obviously, we're looking at the sort of the next stage down the line, and I fully agree with Clive about the whole thing of trying to get an away fans ticket exchange going. But and if we do have to wait, I mean, sorry, why is it we have to wait for all 20 clubs to come on board? Why can't we do this unilaterally, Paul?
Because you can't process that paper ticket on the morning of a game and pass it on to the next person in the
No,
queue.
I mean, why can't we just do the digital thing and like make it sort of solely digital for those? Because obviously, who administers the away tickets? Is it the home club or is it the visiting club?
The home club. So unless the home club's
I'm
set
with
up
you.
to
Okay.
receive, so don't forget a lot of grounds you go to have different access control systems, and you're not scanning a QR code to get into the ground.
I see.
Until you get to that level, that's
I'm
when
with you.
you have that
There's almost like got
opportunity.
to be a homogenized ticketing system in order for this to work properly, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which is coming. Yeah. So
Okay.
it's not ideal for the moment. We hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Patience, and we'll get to a point
Okay.
where we can do it.
Okay.
But also, what you have to accept is at every ground across the Premier League, there'll be a percentage of no-shows. So, don't lose sight of that as well. So there'll
Yeah.
always be a percentage of no-shows. Yes, of course, we want everybody to turn up and sit in their seat. But even on a really good day, when it's Liverpool against Man United or Brighton against Crystal Palace or Arsenal against Tottenham, there still be a huge number in their thousands of no-show for all of those games. And I'm talking thousands. So it happens. It's unfortunate. People buy tickets and don't use them.
Okay. Well, let's just move it on from the ticketing then. Now, Clive, Ernst & Young did a survey, and the album came out best fan engagement. So, that's good, isn't
Fantastic, isn't
it? So, I mean, where does that leave? I mean, obviously, there are always going to be issues for football supporters. I mean, unfortunately, there's not a one as Paul keeps saying. There's not a one cure fits all thing for every club. And obviously, there are always going to be certain issues at every football club. But what's the next issue that you're looking to challenge, and what do you want to do?
I think we're not necessarily challenged. We're looking to work with the club on certainly on safe standing in and the movement of away fans and how we do that in a consultative way. I think as a FAB, there's about 10 of us at the moment. Amex holds slightly more than 10, and how we communicate with all those people and try and get those voices of people that are impacted, and join up that communication really to make sure people have got feel they've got a voice without
Yeah.
necessarily having to email Paul Barber or get a ticket to a fan event pre-Leicester game, for example.
Yeah. But I mean, I know that read it again, reading through the stuff that you've been talking about at meetings. I know there's a lot of talk about the women's team and how obviously we want to build this purpose-built stadium for them. We want to have more games at the Amex, and you're also trying to improve the facilities at Crawley.
Yeah, so from a number of ways, really, just again looking at a slightly different through a slightly different lens as a fan. The club are very busy on match day at Crawley, trying to turn it from as much of the red stadium to a blue stadium as they can, and do all the fan-led stuff. But I don't know if you've been. I've certainly been a few times to Broadfield. It's not a great experience. It's even harder if you're in a wheelchair or you've got some sort of disability. So we've actually the DSA, the Disabled Sports Association. Which is something that the FAB set up 2 years ago. It's a FAB initiative. I've actually gone and looked at the stadium from a disability point of view and how they can help. So, how we until we get this all singing, all dancing stadium closer to Brighton, how we just make those match days a bit more enjoyable. And it's a very different demographic. There's people who only go to women's games. There's people who go to both, certainly, but there's plenty of people that only go to one or the other. And how you make it a safe and enjoyable space for them to get
Yeah.
into football, an entry level drug to the other team potentially as well.
As
That's
someone
something
who
I've
goes
often.
to, sorry, hang on, AD. As someone who goes to both, can I just say how much I'm enjoying watching the women this year?
Yeah, it's
The
fantastic, isn't it?
improvement has been off the scale. And
Yeah.
it's not necessarily just, I don't know if it's down to the management. I mean, the likes of getting Nikita Paris and Fran Kirby in has certainly helped. I mean, it's actually a joy to watch them, but I don't know about you, Clive. What's your? I mean, here I'm going. What's your take on the women's team so far this season?
It seems to me, certainly in the approach, having those couple of senior heads in there that in the dressing room doing that. I went to the Palace away game. I thoroughly enjoyed that, although it wasn't. I thought the result might have been much better actually for us. But yeah, it's more enjoyable to watch than I think it was potentially when I first went 2 or 3 years ago. There's a better quality of football there, yeah, I think across the league actually.
Can I also say that in talking about the other teams as well, and obviously I saw Paul there, that when watching the under 21s, and I will go on about this forever, is just I've finally got to see the Albion score 10 past Crystal Palace.
How many was that?
Well,
I hadn't heard that. How many did they score?
Just 10.
10? Oh, 10.
10, yeah.
You can see it on the Vidi printer now, can't you? They've written it.
Yeah, and 10 frankly frattered Palace that day.
That was the triple header weekend.
That
yes.
was, yeah. yeah. I did all three. It was Villa
so
at Crawley.
I think I saw you at all three, yeah.
Yeah.
4-2 at Crawley, 10-1 at the training
10
ground.
10-0, please. And then
3-2
at... Sorry,
10-0 at the training ground. It should have been more as well.
Oh, should have been 16 easily. Really,
and then 3-2 against Spurs on the
Absolutely.
Sunday.
Absolutely,
yeah. I was at Kieran Maguire's Price of Football show at the weekend, and the Palace supporting Kevin Day very much enjoyed regaling us with stories of being beaten by 10.
Yes, quite. So he should. talking of stories, because we're getting to near the end now. Clive, have you been to the cinema lately?
I haven't. No.
Ah, so you haven't actually got round to watching Stand or Fall yet?
I haven't, no, unfortunately.
Am I the only sort of... well, obviously, Paul can talk about it, because he's had a major hand of it. You haven't seen it yet, AD?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Right, well,
not,
if you do get the chance to see it, do. Paul...
Oh, I'm desperate to see it. But...
What happens next? Because obviously, I think there's a showings early this week, but what happens next?
So we may do another run of showings at some point, potentially. I think, we can do that. We can do some screenings. But there are talks going on at the moment with a major broadcaster about taking the rights and obviously screening the film. But potentially, it's not guaranteed, but they may also tweak the ending slightly.
So we lose 10-0 against Crystal Palace.
No, but you maybe there's some other bits put into the
well
ending.
I mean, listen, every fan that was there, and when I say there, I mean during the war years, will say, well, they didn't do enough of this and they didn't mention this, but they did too much. And everyone's got their story, and I think that the important thing is, and you have to sort of like look, you have to look out on this, is that we know the story. We were there, you know, we've been there, seen there, got the t-shirt, got the stadium. It's also telling the story to those, well, the Brighton fans who weren't there, but also the other fans of other clubs, some of whom were there,
absolutely,
on Fans
absolutely
United Day, and
yeah, or the global fans who are supporting Brighton now from afar by TV, but you know, in America, in Japan, because of the Matoma effect, et cetera, et cetera. So you're telling the story to them as well. So I think there is a real, you know, interest in the history of Brighton. How do you squeeze 25 years into, you know, 90 minutes? It's virtually impossible to do that. But at the same time, it's a 90 minute documentary. I think it does it justice. I think it.
I fully agree. Yeah,
it's a great story. Obviously, the story constantly is moving on. The ending's evolving. There is no ending to this
good
story.
That's
the biggest problem and the biggest challenge that we've had.
Paul, the question is, have you had any feedback from other people who have seen it that aren't Brighton supporters, and what do they think?
Well, obviously we did the screening and we had some media there and they loved it. And the feedback was incredibly positive from them. In terms of that first screening we did at the Duke of York's and the screenings at the Amex, of course, it's been all Brighton supporters who are desperate to see it. So I don't think a lot of non-Brighton supporters have seen it. And all the feedback that I've trawled through on social media has come from Brighton supporters, albeit incredibly positive. And I haven't seen much, if anything, negative about it. So... no is the answer to that. I would hope that other supporters actually might enjoy it more because they don't know the story,
Yeah.
and actually embrace what is, you know, it's crazy, isn't it? Some of these documentaries, sports documentaries, Hollywood wouldn't come up with scripts as
Yeah,
ludicrous.
our stories are farce.
Yeah, I mean, we just had the one with George Dowell at Worthing, which has got lots and lots of traction from people
Absolutely.
all over the world who aren't aware of that story.
Well, listen, I went to watch Standoff 4 with someone who's just bailed from Spurs to come and support Brighton, and he was, I mean, he kind of had an
Trophy
idea.
hunter.
Yes, yeah.
Well, they're not going to get one, are they?
Exactly. Well, I think we're more likely to. Yeah, I mean, it's a lad from Heathfield, but he spent his time because, again, part of that lost generation from 20 odd years ago, he went and supported Spurs. He's now sort of, you know, he doesn't have the traction with them. Realize that actually, just look south, and there's another bloody brilliant team, you know, just waiting to go to the next level. But the story must be told. And he was blown away by it. And yes, he ended up with wet eyes. And you know, I think a lot of people would be, especially those when you get to see certain people are in it who are sadly no longer with us. But also the thing of, oh yeah, and there's even a couple of bits and pieces where I think, oh, I forgot that. Or yeah, that was good. The only thing I would say is they didn't do Seagull Skull, which was probably just as well, given that it's
But Al,
terrible.
there's so much that
Oh, absolutely.
we couldn't do. We didn't tell the story because
Absolutely.
You could
Yeah,
put
no,
it,
but
at
you
that
could
point,
put it on the
can't.
extras.
Extras on a DVD. Don't people
There,
still play
yeah.
it?
I actually saw a post on social media that said, you know, I hope the club released this on DVD. I kind of thought, oh, we probably won't. It's more likely to be on a platform of
Yeah.
some description. And eventually, at some point in the future, it will, you know, it could well be on a streaming platform as well. But ideally, the next phase would be that broadcasters across the world will pick up the documentary, screen the documentary. So it will go out to those other fans of other clubs. And we all sit down and watch those great soccer documentaries, football documentaries. You know, the Maradona one during COVID became that sort of mass event, the Channel 4, when Channel 4 aired it and got the rights to it, because we've been starved of any live football. You know, we like to sit and watch those football documentaries. This will be no different. People will
Yeah.
sit down and watch it in the
Well,
same way that we do for other clubs.
yeah. Well, all I do know is, Paul, that for those who have seen it, they want to see it again. So we do need another run of those at the Amex, I think. And for, I was unable to make it for these ones, but I'm
Well,
really
make
desperate to see
time,
it.
AD.
So
Seriously, make time.
yeah, I will. Yeah.
Well,
Talking of time.
as we're recording this on Monday night, you have one final opportunity tomorrow night. Obviously, by the time people are listening to this,
Too late.
it will be a case of, yeah, potentially a second run. But there may be a local screening. I can't confirm or deny at this stage, but there may be another local screening, which could be something
Worthing
decent
Dome
for a
would be
bit of
really
a
helpful,
fundraiser.
Paul.
It would be. Unfortunately, I've not heard from Worthing Dome, but if they would like to screen the documentary
Oh,
and
I'd happily go
they can.
back there and watch it again. Absolutely.
Well, that is all we have time for this week. So, thank you so much to Clive Steed. You have to come back and talk to us about football next time, Clive.
Absolutely, that'd be good.
But thank you to Paul Camlin. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.